You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Pacers traveled to the Tundra on Wednesday night to take on the Minnesota Timberwolves. It was a cold start for most of the team, except Domantas Sabonis, who had 23 points in the first half. That was not enough, though, as the Pacers trailed by 7 heading into the break. But a strong second-half performance from Malcolm Brogdon and Doug McDermott helped lead the way for the Pacers. Brogdon finished with 21 points, 6 rebounds, and 6 assists. And McDermott shot 5 of 10 from the field for 14 points. To lead the way for the Minnesota Timberwolves, Jarrett Culver had 17 points, Gorgui Dieng had 15, and Robert Covington had 14, and Kate Biadiop had 15 off the bench. But like I said, that was not enough for the Timberwolves as the Pacers beat the T-Wolves 104-99 to move to 26-15 and on pace to win 52 games at the halfway mark of the season. Welcome in the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, I'm the host of this wonderful show. So, as I do every podcast for every game, I bring the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Pacers now win over the Minnesota Timberwolves. And then I'll bring you a segment on the on-off stats and how they really tell a pretty interesting story about this Pacer team and really who is the Pacers' most valuable player. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash for your wallet. Between the end of the football season, the NBA, and the start of college basketball now, it's time to get off the sideline and get into the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little, to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they can let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. Let's say, for example, you want to bet, let's go to the football games real fast. You want to bet Chiefs at home, and I'm assuming the 49ers are favored. That might be a nice bet to make. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. And if you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000 right now, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. So the Pacers defeated the Timberwolves on Wednesday night in what will be the first game of a back-to-back against the T-Wolves. It won't be back-to-back days, but they played T-Wolves on Friday, so two games in a row against the same team. The first place to start is with some good. They won this game, so always got to start positive, right? Domantas Sabonis had, I thought was going to have the best scoring performance of the Pacers player all season, right? 23 first-half points, was unstoppable. Now, granted, everything he did in the first half helped the team in the second half, right? Helped set up Brogdon and McDermott because of just the threat of Sabonis did that. A lot of that, but a 29-point performance in 13 of 17 shooting. This is a guy who just returned from a bruised knee, and and they said he still had it, was going to play through the pain. He played 36 minutes. He did have a little tiny bit of foul trouble, but in the first half mainly. But besides that, yeah, I mean, this was a stellar performance from Sabonis. It was a marquee performance, the kind of performance that you kind of, when we look back and say, why did Domantas Sabonis make an All-Star game? We say, well, it was games like this where he had 29, 13, 6 assists on 13 of 17 shooting, which I believe is like something in the 60% range. So the other good tonight, and I think this is a continuing to be the kind of the most valuable thing to the Pacers, and that's Malcolm Brogdon, the veteran now point guard out of Virginia, returned for a second game, put up 21 points, 50% shooting, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, an awesome fourth quarter where I believe he had 10 points in the fourth quarter. Him and McDermott both had 10, I think. To lead the way for 20 of the Pacers, 28 second fourth quarter points. Sorry, he was just superb at the end of this game. He continues to be the Pacers' clutch player now that we had that stretch where Pacers weren't sure, right? I mean, Holiday stepped up at times, Aaron Holiday that is, and Warren okay against the Hornets and stuff like that. But when the going gets tough, when you need a couple buckets and you need some free throws, Brogdon becomes the guy, and he was the guy tonight. And I did miss a free throw. Again, he seems to miss one of those late, which seems kind of odd to me, but again, didn't affect the team. He had, I think, a couple huge baskets late on a lot of pick and rolls with Sabonis. And I mean, he was just, I thought he had, the way to rate Brogdon is sort of on a scale, right? So, like, he's always going to be solid, right? You know, rarely he's going to have, like, just a dud game. You know, a dud game for Brogdon is like 14 points, 9 assists, and 6 rebounds, right? Where he maybe goes 5 of 15 shooting. I believe that's kind of what it was against the against the 76ers on Monday night, except I believe he finished with more free throws, which led him to get some more points, right? And that's not even a dud. It's just a solid performance from him, right? But when you rate him, it's like, is he solid? Is he good? Is he great? Did he help the team win in a measurable impact, right? That's where I kind of view it. And the past two games, even though he's only put up 21 points, now that's saying only, and shot, you know, like I said, 5-15 on Monday and 9 of 18 tonight, he just continues to do enough to help the team win late, to keep the team in it. And, you know, it very much is reminiscent to me of the 2017-18 Oladipo, where, you know, they were certain game, Oladipo just took over, and you'd see it. But a lot of times, Oladipo's biggest strength was that he could hang around with 10 points for three quarters, and then he'd have an explosion or have a fourth quarter closeout where he could have 6 of the last 8 points or 8 of the last 10, hit a couple of big free throws, like, where, and then he'd finish the night with 25 points, right? So Brogdon's doing it a little bit smaller scale, right? So more like he's maybe has 10 the whole game and finishes with 20. Oladipo would be like 12 to 14 and finish with 25. But that was like, oh, that was one of Oladipo's biggest strengths, that he could just be the guy when they needed the guy to step up. And Brogdon continued to do that. One thing I've noticed, and I just kind of thought of this later in the game, was Brogdon missed about, what, I think 2 weeks with the back injury, a little over 2 weeks, and that helped actually his finger heal, right? So he was kind of playing with this, you know, when you, I believe he dislocated his pinky, I don't remember if he dislocated, I probably didn't break it, but, you know, he's playing with a splint, right? So you can play through the pain. It's common for players at that time. If you play basketball, you know what it's like, you know, if you hurt your finger, you can easily play through it, but it does affect you, right? It was on a shooting hand, so it does kind of mess with your shot a little bit. It was good to see tonight. You know, I don't think he had any splint on. He looks like his finger healed. While the back injury certainly is concerning in the long-termness, and can he, you know, stay healthy the whole for an extended period of time, like 40, 50 games, the rest of the season or the last half of the season, the back injury break did afford him the time, it looks like, to fix his finger, which is important because the shot looks a little better, I've noticed. You know, it wasn't great tonight. He was 1-4 from 3, but he's 3-6 on Monday against the 76ers. He just looks like his jump shot looks a little bit better, in my opinion, from what, you know, from the 360 view I'm watching this. All right, so let's go to some of the, I guess, not-so-good things, right? So when it comes to kind of where the T-Wolves had success tonight, I think it was pretty obvious that they had a lot of success from the three-point line. They had a really good night shooting 40% from three. That's what kind of kept them in the game, in my opinion. And then when you really get to it, the Pacers lost the offensive rebounding battle. Now, they did tie in the overall rebounding battle, but those two kind of key points, and those kind of go hand-in-hand to me, right? So a lot of times the Pacers' biggest problem is that they allow the long offensive rebound, which then leads to a three or a second chance three and whatnot. So, you know, I wouldn't say they were, like, blown out of the water, and certainly they were fine, but they, considering that they really had the size advantage, even though I know Gordy Dang is probably matched up Sabonis well, but, you know, the fact that they can play a 7-foot center at all moments, either in Sabonis or in Turner, they did not win the rebounding battle is kind of concerning, and then, you know, that three-point, they continue not to be the best at guarding the three-point range at times, right? So I believe, let me rephrase that, right? So I believe the Pacers actually, stats show they're a pretty good three-point defending team, right? So they have the sixth best defensive three-point percentage allowed, right? They allow 34% for teams. That's the sixth worst, right? So teams should the sixth worst on them in the league. Flip that around, the Pacers shoot 37, which is the fifth highest in the league, right? So that seems to be good, but right, the raw number says, oh, they're good stopping the three, right? But the problem becomes is that the Pacers allow a lot more attempts than other teams. They're in the top two-thirds. They're and point and attempts allowed per game. And the problem that it becomes this kind of consistency thing, right? So over time, you know, even if a team shoots 34%, if they're taking 4 or 5 extra threes per game, it ends up balancing out and being worse for the team, right? So, you know, I honestly think it's like this, like, terrible flaw that is going to kill this team, and it hurt them a couple games against some good teams, but it's something that you can see against some of these bad teams, which will translate worse when they play like a team like the Bucks. I mean, the Nuggets, that already happened, and they played second time this weekend, so that we'll see if that happens again, stuff like that. But that's kind of where they struggled tonight. I mean, frankly, I don't think the T-Wolves had a good game. I mean, T-Wolves' biggest problem, right, is their best player has now missed almost a month. I think Towns has been out since December 18th. And they're just, without him, they're lifeless. I mean, that's the best way I can put it, right? They don't really have, like, this, like, any offensive weapon, right? So Wiggins should be, but he's not. And he's just going to be a disappointing player, right? They have Covington, who I think is a very good player, but again, is like a number two or three option. He's just not good. You know, Covington is best, but he's your fourth option defender. You know, he can go, tonight went 5 of 12, that kind of game, score 14 points, just be kind of, you know, what I would view almost as the Jeremy Lamb role for the Pacers, right? That's where Covington succeeds, because he's a really good defensive player and stuff like that. But I mean, they really struggled in the first half, the Pacers did, and I think that had more to do with the way the T-Wolves played and the way the Pacers played in a way, or maybe had more to do with the way the Pacers were just like missing shots than the way the T-Wolves were playing. So that's right. That's a better way to phrase it, right? So, I mean, that's kind of the ugly, I would say, is that they continue to have these kind of iffy first halves. The Pacers scored 54 first half points, but led up 59 and trailed by 5 at the half. I believe I need to correct that in the open. I believe I said 7. It was 5. You know, against the T-Wolves, they only scored 40 first half points and trailed by 9. I mean, they just continue to just, you know, have these kind of crappy starts. Luckily, you know, they can figure, they get the second half sparks and they play really good defense, and the T-Wolves just went really cold to the second half. But at some point, that gets to a point where, like, you got to start. You can't keep digging yourself holes. You got to kind of get good starts. It used to be a problem with Pacers before, right? In previous years, I feel like this is a big problem, especially last year. They just dig this hole and to fight their way back. And that kind of changed this year. And I wonder part of that is now you're getting the kind of rotation reset, right? So for a while, the rotation had been kind of in flux, right? Sabonis had a really interesting comment. I think it was at halftime. No, McDermott. I'm sorry. McDermott had a comment kind of on the broadcast where he's like, it was finally good to see the old boys back together, right? The old kind of bench unit. I think the Fox Sports broadcast team did the floor unit or the floor something. I can't remember the name now. But basically, it's a lineup with Sabonis plus the four bench guys, right? So this is the first time that's returned, right? Because Brogdon has been out for so long that it's been kind of in flux. That puts it's Holiday, McConnell, or the Holiday brothers, McConnell, McDermott, and Sabonis. So I wonder if there's some of that readjusting still. I think it's working. I mean, we see second half where this is just exploding and it's being awesome. And I think a key reason the Pacers were so successful early in the year is that second unit was just destroying teams in second and fourth quarters over and over and over again. So I think maybe there's just a little bit of readjustment period for the moment, and by, you know, game 3 or 4, we'll be okay. The last thing I like from this game that I was really interested in buying is less to do with good, bad, and ugly, but more have to do with the fact that they play them again on Friday. And this was, I think, winning in Minnesota was important, right? So in my opinion, it's really hard to beat the same team twice in a row, right? Especially a team you play so soon and whatever, because, you know, especially on this kind of, like, a team can adjust, right? It's kind of like an NBA playoff series, right? It's very hard when you have two good teams. I grant people are not that good, but when you have two teams that have decent coaches that to win back to back, right? Just because you can adjust, you make an adjustment, you know, succeed and that stuff like that. But winning in Minnesota is going to help the Pacers, right? Because I think the Pacers had a better shot of winning the home game than the road game. So getting the road game now gives them a shot at home, which is important. And that'll be the last home game the Pacers play until I think the 29th when they only did returns, right? They go on a 5-game road trip starting on Sunday against the Nuggets. So just interesting to me. I don't know. I think they're in a good spot to go at least 3-1 this week, at least be 3-0 heading to Denver game on Sunday. So that's pretty exciting for me. I'm pretty excited by that. The last guy, I guess I haven't mentioned him yet, and I did it in the open, but McDermott had a fantastic game. 14 points, 5-10 shooting. And really, the combination of McDermott and McConnell, who had eight assists tonight, they both played about 20 minutes, 18, 20 minutes. Continued to be really good. They just, every time I think Aaron Holiday should play with McConnell, we get games like this where Aaron Holiday goes 0-5 and McConnell has this, like, just like, monster assist game, and you just watch McConnell play, and maybe the seeing him versus the raw numbers, which I think I'm going to dissect in the next segment, and I can do that, kind of are two different stories, right? When you watch him on the court, you feel like he's a really high energy player who brings a lot of enthusiasm, who pushes the team, pushes the pace, and gets a lot of assists. But maybe the raw numbers say, well, he's not good at defense, he's not a great scorer, so he doesn't really add to that much, but you just feel like he adds something to this team as a kind of a spark, and he just has a chemistry with Sabonis and McDermott, and really, I think Justin Holiday. I mean, really, all of those guys just had a chemistry that it feels kind of sad that LeBron's going to have to break it up or not. But, you know, I do think Lamb will be able to slot in. We'll see if McConnell plays or not, who they decide to push out. And that's where I'm going to go next. So let's take one quick break, and then we're going to talk about the on-off stats and what that could mean for the Pacers' rotation once Oladipo returns. All right, welcome back in Locked On Pacers podcast. So it's really hard to find, like, stats that tell the story of how important a player is to a team, right? I mean, you could get offensive rating, defensive rating, things like this, but a lot of it is such a circumstance of who they're playing with and what, right? So, like, for example, right, over the past 2 years, for example, if you take a player's net rating, you really have to factor in how many minutes they play Oladipo, who just had this ridiculous net rating, right? And even the on-off stats, which I'm going to go through, can be tinged this way. But what the on-off stats show, they're kind of one of the true stats that show when the player's on the court, how productive the team is, how when he's off, and basically show how replaceable he is, interchangeable he is in a way, right? So, you know, for example, we see this a lot, right? We'll see the kind of sometimes switching of Sabonis and Turner with the bench unit based on who has many fouls and whatnot, and then we see Gogolin one time, right? And so you the on-off stats would clearly say that as soon as Sabonis leaves that bench unit, it just gets worse, right? Like significantly, right? So Sabonis, and this is where the stat really shows, like, Sabonis is the Pacers' best player. I mean, the on-off stats show Sabonis is the only player who has a positive net rating on the court and the team has a negative net rating is off, right? Now, granted, that's the fact that Sabonis plays the most minutes on the team. The minutes without him usually involve, Goga, right? So the minutes that Sabonis isn't playing, the team is playing, it's the occasional, like, it's just Turner, Justin Holiday, and the other three starters, but most of the time it's Goga and then the four bench guys, which is just, like, the worst lineup team has. I mean, just because of the players. Goga is the team's probably worst in the semi-rotation player the Pacers have, right? So I pulled all nine of the main rotation guys. I did not pull Goga's up because I just don't need to dig into that. But Sabonis' stats show that he is by far the Pacers' most valuable player just because of that kind of on-off stat. Now, the second place will not shock that many people, and it's Malcolm Brogdon, whose on-off stat difference is 3.2. The Pacers are 4.7 when he's on the court, but 1.5 off. And again, what's interesting about this stat and that on-off number is that the Pacers are still a positive without Brogdon, right? Without Sabonis, they're negative. And again, that's because when Brogdon leaves, you have that bench unit, and you have a team, a unit that is can supplement and actually is one of the very few kind of positive benching, right? Instead of just holding the lead, that unit can often extend leads or push them a little farther. And you see that really in, like, kind of the bench guys on offsets, right? So kind of some of the main ones, right? So if you look at, like, Justin Holiday on the court, you know, he has a differential of minus 2.4, but they're both positive. On the court, he's a positive 0.2. One and off the court, the team's a 4.5, but again, still a positive. When you bring up TJ McConnell, you get the same, right? The team's a positive 0.2 and McConnell's on the floor, but a positive 0.4 he's not. But again, still a positive, right? So when you go through, really when you go through all nine players on off stats, they're the only player who has a negative anything, and that's when he's off court, Sabonis. Besides that, every player is positive when they're on, and the team is either better or just a little slightly worse, but still positive when they're off, which is really interesting. It kind of shows the depth of this team as well. But a stat that I think this kind of can show, and that's what I was kind of teasing last time, is that the McConnell stats, right? I think the eye test and the feeling is McConnell is this high energy, you know, really, I think, really solid assist player who just, like, there's something there, the intangible, something quantifiable that just, like, he's really good and we can't afford not to play him, right? You know, he's got a net rating of 3.1, which you take a guy like Aaron Holiday, they have the exact same net rating on the team of 3.1. Granted, they play a lot of minutes together, but that's why. But then you go the on-off stats and you realize that's where it differs, right? The Pacers are better without McConnell. Now, granted, you have to give some grain of salt. McConnell is usually playing with bench guys and is, when he's off, it's the best unit playing, right? It's the Brogdon, the Sabonis, the Turner, the Warren, the Lamb unit. That's just the Pacers' best unit this year. Where Holiday has the benefit of being having played with units some more, but what it does show is that Holiday has been succeeding with those guys when he subs in, right? So it isn't just the fact that, like, Holiday, you know, Holiday's really succeeding, and really, I think, in any unit he plays. That's kind of what this shows, right? With the team, so Holiday is a 4.6 on and a 0.6 off the court, right? So I think it shows the versatility of what Holiday brings, right? Where he can play with, because he's been kind of the go-to guard in any kind of injury, whether it's Lamb, whether it's Brogdon. He's been the guy that playing two guard or point guard, depending on whoever's hurt and whatnot. So, and I think that's where, and I did this kind of last week, but that's kind of where Holiday gets the slight advantage on McConnell. And if you look at, when you dig deeper, is that he's just a more versatile and fits in more situations kind of player, right? So then it comes to, right, I did this last time, but McDermott and Holiday too. At Justin Holiday now, we're talking about, like, on-off, right? Well, their stats are, right, so let's go net rating again. Both players are in the threes for net rating on-off the court. But when you look at the on-off, or verbal net rating, but on-off stats, Justin Holiday is 2.1 on the court, and the team is 4.5 when he's off the court. So the team gains 2 points per possession, right? 2.5 points when he's off the court. McDermott, it's 3 on, 3.1 off. What that shows to me, again, is McDermott fits in every lineup a little better than Holiday does because of whatever reason. I mean, I think it's fair, right? McDermott's three-point shooting, his ability to stretch the floor, his ability just to be an offensive weapon no matter who on the court with him is really important. He can play a little three, a little four. So can Holiday, but McDermott fits just a little bit better, right? Because offense is just a little bit better and the defense is just good enough to be, you know, to be on the court, right? So, like, when you look at, like, defensive rating, it's really odd because McDermott actually has a better defensive rating than Justin Holiday, which is insane, right? Justin Holiday is a 1.47, McDermott's 1.39. No, circumstance, who they play with, whatever it is, but it's just interesting to me, right? that they have a different. And I should correct myself real quick. When it comes to net rating, actually TJ McConnell is a 0.2 and Aaron Hollins is a 4.6, which is significantly higher. And that's kind of one of the differences too. But going back, so I mean that's where these on-off stats kind of show, right? If you take any of the five starters, you know, what's interesting to me too also, I guess, another one is that when you TJ Warren actually has a better the Pacers are actually slightly better when he's not on the court. I think that kind of shows some of his defense, right? The Pacers score less, but they're also a better defensive team by just, you know, making the net margin just slightly better when he's off the court. But when you get a guy like Jeremy Lamb, you get something similar, right? Lamb and Warren get something similar. These both on-off stats where the Pacers are better. So kind of back to my original point is these on-off stats show a couple things, in my opinion. They show one, Sabonis is the most valuable player. And they show really the only two, like, you know, critical pieces of this Pacer team right now really are Sabonis and Brogdon. The only three players to have actually a positive on-off, like when you subtract the two, are Sabonis, Brogdon, and Holiday. Everybody else ends up with this weird kind of difference. And what it shows to me is those three players, why that is because they're the three most flexible players in the Pacers lineup, right? Brogdon can play anything from 1 to 3. Holiday can play 1 or 2. Sabonis can play 4 or 5. I mean, it's just like interesting things, but it shows the flexibility of the players and it shows their ability to fit with most players. And it's interesting to me, right? Because at some points, too, kind of taking this to the next step, the Pacers are going to have to figure out whether they want to, like, what is their best lineup, right? Their best five crunch time lineup, right? So, I mean, I think right now it's presumably crunch time is going to be Brogdon, Warren, Oladipo, Sabonis, Turner, right? But is there a lineup where you would rather play, you know, Brogdon, Oladipo, Holiday, McDermott, Sabonis? I mean, is that, you know, your best offensive lineup? Like, if you need points desperately, is that the lineup you go with? And that might be. That frankly could be. You know, if you need defense, do you readjust and go Turner, Justin Holiday, Lamb, Oladipo, Brogdon? Maybe you do. I mean, that's the thing that these on-off sets kind of show is that there's sort of this, like, there's this weird area on this team where some players are actually better being off the court a little bit, I guess is the right way to put it, right? And it really shows, like I said, that the only kind of non-interchangeable players, and really just two, because I think Holiday stats are a little skewed by playing a lot with Sabonis and playing a lot with Brogdon and just kind of being the kind of leader on the bench, getting a lot of minutes starters, just the mixing and matching of that, are really Brogdon and Sabonis. And not to, like, you know, make it kind of ends on a too sour note, but what that really means is that if you're going to trade somebody, those two guys are untradeable, frankly, because they're the only players that you definitely need. Everybody else can be somewhat replaced in situation. Now, every player can be replaced. Now, what are you getting for them? That's a whole other question and all that kind of stuff. And so, like, that's where you get me is, like, what do you, you know, you can talk about trading guy, but what do you get for the guy at the end of the day? But what it means is that if there is an opportunity to really actually improve the team in a way that makes sense, the only two guys I would not trade are either Brogdon or Sabonis. I wonder what you guys thought. I wonder if that was a little too confusing for you guys. I know I kind of threw a lot of numbers at you guys, but if you got a chance, you should look at the on-off stats. They're kind of interesting. Sabonis are crazy. I mean, it's definitely why he's going to be an All-Star, because he's got this, you know, I'm going to ask Tony after we got this podcast about, you know, who has the biggest, like, net rating drop. So, like, what team, you know, for example, like, Sabonis was 6 and the team was -3 was off the court. So, like, that's a 9-point difference. Who has the highest one? How does that rank? Because I think Sabonis got to be up there in probably the top, like, 15 or 20. I'm sure, you know, Giannis and Harden, those guys have really high ones as well. So, just interesting. As always, you can tweet the podcast at Locked On Pacers. Me at FreedomAdam5. Tony will bring you a preview of, I guess, the Friday night T-Wolves game and the Sunday Nuggets game. And then we'll be back again on Monday with a full week of podcasts once again. And we are counting down days to Oladipo's return. We are getting there. We are now, this podcast on a Thursday, 13 days away. Get excited. I'm excited. I'm getting pumped. 13 days to Oladipo's return. That's all for this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, we will see you guys again tomorrow.